Hey, everybody, welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
And, I'll try not to sneeze and cough on the microphone, because that's gross.
Yeah, you're just sounding awful over there.
Yeah, and I'm actually pretty good at the moment, so, yeah.
You sound a little stuffed up.
A little bit, but I'm still psyched because we're both headed to California this week.
I know. I'm leaving tomorrow morning, early.
Yeah, I'm having a little party over here, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am not packed. I have to take lessons in packing light, I really. You know me and my suitcase, that big suitcase I have.
It's so cute.
I really just need to buy a slightly smaller one.
Well, you know, or whatever.
I'm going for a week and a day, so I've got to have...
You gotta have your stuff.
I gotta have my protein powder and my maca powder.
Oh my god, you're so funny.
Of course I could buy it there, but then I've gotta lug it back, so I might as well just bring what I have.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotta pack that.
Well, we are creatures of habit, but you know, one of the reasons I'm going out there, I'm going to San Francisco for the Green Festival, which I'm pretty excited about. And last week's show we had talked to the president of Green Festivals, Corinne Basler, and you know, I'm pretty excited. We've got some fun stuff going on in Portland there at the first Green Fest ever in Portland in December.
Right on.
So we got an amazing show for you. A lot of lead up for holiday stuff. In fact, I think all of our segments today are touching on, you know, getting into this holiday thing, right?
Right.
But,
we've got back-to-back foodie files.
Well, no, we have a Green Dude with Jeff Yeager, who it's
oh,
basically...
Excuse me.
It's okay. It's basically a foodie...
He's talking about food.
He's talking about food, but he's our Green Dude this week, and his mission is to save the giblets. So for the carnivores that are cooking...
Is that code for something else?
No, really, it's about, you know, like, don't throw that stuff away. There's
right.
Like a lot of stuff you can do with it. And then we talked to Jerry James Stone about how to have a vegan and vegetarian holiday and how to... And he and Ed Begley, he talks about a video they did together about, you know, vegan holidays. Because, you know, Ed's a vegan.
Yeah, we'll be putting that up on our website.
But I had the most amazing conversation with this woman, Sally Ranney, who is a force in this world to conserve and change, to make change, but to conserve, you know, she's a nature conservationist. She's all about renewable energy. She's worked in both the public and private sectors. She's worked with three presidents.
Wow.
If you go to her site... you see at the top, like, pictures of her with President Jimmy Carter, with Mikhail Gorbachev, with,
wow,
you know, all these amazing, amazing people who are making, you know, a difference in the world. And she's been all about nature conservancy, renewable energy, sustainable living, climate change. All these things have been, you know, she's been working on for 30 years.
Amazing.
So she talked about, well, you know, we talked about consumerism. And she said it's like the elephant in the room. Nobody really wants to talk about consumerism and what impact that has, not just on the environment, but on human, you know,
right,
the human impact and the social impact.
And there, that is what our world seems to revolve upon.
Well, our
especially
culture
if you walk
does.
Into any store and now everything's decorated for Christmas before it's even Thanksgiving.
Certainly our culture and the developed world. But anyway, so it's a really interest. She's so interesting, and I just want to encourage everybody to listen carefully to everything today. Why not? You know, it's all good. It's all good. But in the meantime, I just want to remind people that they can, of course, find us at thegreendivas.com, but to please follow us on Twitter, at The Green Divas. Same on Instagram, at The Green Divas.
And you can sign up for our newsletter on our website.
Yeah, and you know, we have to do a newsletter.
Oh, we've been really bad about sending those.
we're definitely not spammy. We're not spammy.
No, we're not. We're like complete polar opposite of spammy.
You're the anti-spam.
It's like, wait, where are the Green Divas? I could have sworn I signed up for their newsletter, but I haven't heard from them in like 3 months. What's going on?
Yeah. So we promise we'll eventually send something out, and it'll be good. It'll be good. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the rest of this show, and have a great green week, and we'll touch base from California.
Yes, we will.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Well, after a long dry spell without our fabulous Green Dude and ultimate cheapskate, Jeff Yeager, we're back again. Yay! Hi, Jeff.
Hi! Thanks for having me back again.
And for people who don't know Jeff, well, you know, climb out from under your rock, because he's the ultimate cheapskate. He's got a series of books about how you can live with less, and he really is the ultimate cheapskate. But so much about what he does is about reusing, upcycling, and it's a very green lifestyle while you're saving the green. And check out his YouTube series, The Cheap Life. So today, with you know, the turkey event of the season coming, Jeff has a mission.
Yeah, you bet. You know, and this is such a busy time of year for me as a cheapskate, because as you know, I was on your show a while back talking about how you can carve your jack-o'-lantern and eat it too, encouraging people to eat their pumpkins. No sooner am I off that high point of the year than the big one rolls around, which is my annual Save the Giblets.
Yeah.
Campaign. Save the giblets.
Save the giblets.
So here's the shocker. By my calculations, every year at Thanksgiving alone, Americans spend about $30 million on giblets. Of course, most turkeys come with the giblets in it. You rarely have the option of opting out, and you're paying by the pound, so you're paying for that additional meat, whether you want it or not. And, of course, the vast majority of Americans simply toss out that bag of giblets, which usually includes the neck and the gizzard and the heart and the liver.
Right, right.
And so on. They're sort of disgusted by it. But, you know, it's $30 million we're spending on something that most of us are throwing out. And, of course, all of that is edible. It's really quite tasty. It's pretty good for you, a lot of it. And so I'm encouraging people to take a second look at that baggie.
Yeah.
And consider ways to cook it up, if not for themselves, at least for a pet.
Yeah.
But I love it. I think it's a favorite part of the turkey. Here's another shocker for you. I did the math on this. Americans at Thanksgiving throw away enough giblets that from a caloric point of view, those giblets could feed 55,000 people for an entire year.
What?
That's enough calories to feed 55,000 people for an entire year. But of course, you'd have to come up with 55,000 people willing to eat nothing but giblets for 12 months.
Well,
if you could.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows this stuff other than the ultimate cheapskate, really?
Yeah, you know, I guess this is what makes you the ultimate cheapskate. You're figuring this all out, man.
I'm always advancing the cheapskate sciences with this kind of research. My wife says, what do you do all day, Jeff? Well,
yeah.
This stuff takes time.
This is math, man. This is some serious math.
Yeah. So anyhow, with regard to those giblets, I mean, I did a video on this, and I've written a couple of different articles that give some recipes. You know, I think they're really tasty. You generally want to simmer them until they're fully cooked, and then there's some picking to be done in terms of cutting the meat off the neck, which is, you know, very bony neck.
Oh,
and then
okay.
There are some gristly parts on some of the internal organs. And then you have a nice meat, which at the very least you should chop up and add to the gravy at Thanksgiving dinner, or add to the stuffing of the turkey. Or one of my favorites, an ultimate cheapskate, the original, is I make a liver sherry pate.
Really?
Yeah, and just using a food processor. And it's real simple. I give kind of the instructions in the video on YouTube. But you basically prepare the giblets by cooking them just as I described, put them into a food processor with some butter, with some cream sherry, with some onions perhaps, and blend all that up, and you have just a beautiful pate. to serve.
Why not? I mean, you know, people make chicken liver pate all the time.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, so this is just the giblet pate. And it's funny because a lot of people are repulsed by the notion of eating giblets and so on, but I've had a lot of people who watched that video and said, you know, we tried that just as a fluke, and everybody in the family loved it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a vegetarian, so it doesn't really appeal to me, but I will say from my memory banks when my mother made a pate, I mean, it was really good.
Yeah, so popular, obviously, in Europe and other parts around the world, and oftentimes made of internal, less desirable pieces of meat. And, you know, I'm not a vegetarian. I sometimes wish I was, but I quite like meat.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are critical, saying, gosh, you do all, you know, I eat a lot of unusual things, like lamb's heads are one of my favorite things. Which are popular many places around the world.
Yeah.
And my only point is, you know, if I was a vegetarian, it'd be one thing, but I am a meat eater,
yeah.
And I think the most moral thing you can do as a meat eater is to use the whole animal.
Oh, I totally agree. And
you
so
know,
I...
Maybe it would be better to not eat the animal at all, but if you're going to do it...
Yes.
You know, then use it up.
I do. I agree with that. And so I applaud you for using all the bits and using them well.
If we can only get Americans to eat their Halloween pumpkins and finish their giblets, we'll have moved the ball a little further down the court, won't we?
I'm really impressed with this. This is a mission, man. Every year we're gonna tout this horn earlier and earlier.
Save the giblets.
Thanks so much, Jeff, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Stay cheap.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Green Festival Expo is the longest-running sustainability event in the U.S., and the largest one with over 250 exhibitors and over 50 inspirational speakers. Dine on delicious local vegan or vegetarian food, take a free yoga class, and more. In San Francisco, November 13th through 15th, and Portland, Oregon, December 11th through 13th. Visit greenfestivals.org.
There was a time when getting the Giant Sears catalog once a year was something to look forward to. More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order Tallgrass Beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
Each year, 19 billion catalogs are mailed out to Americans. It takes upwards of 53 million trees and over 56 billion gallons of wastewater to produce the paper that the catalogs are printed on. And over 98% of them end up in landfills, with just a fraction going to recycling. And what's worse is that most people never even order out of the catalogs anyway. You can stop the influx of catalogs by finding the website catalogchoice.org to put a stop to unwanted catalogs that not only clog up your mailbox but also landfills. Within 10 weeks, you can become part of the solution to global warming instead of being part of the problem. Perhaps the once-a-year catalog wasn't a bad idea after all. I'm Bill Curtis, and Earth Matters.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
Oh, it is so much fun to have this incredible foodie dude, Green Dude foodie guy. Jerry James Stone is an author and chef, and right now his website is Cooking Stoned, which is just funny, all right? It's just funny. And he's a great personality with the most colorful, delicious recipes. I know I have tried some in the past, but I'm looking forward to talking to him a little bit about food for the holidays. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you had done a free holiday vegetarian vegan cookbook with our friend Ed Begley.
Yeah, I've been friends with Ed for a while. You know, he's extremely active in the sustainable community, and I was over at his house, and we were just talking about how difficult it was for people to eat vegan and vegetarian during the holidays.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's difficult for us that are vegan or vegetarian. We know what to cook, but
right.
Like, no one really knows what to make for us. You know, that's the problem. And so I wanted to create this book that was sort of that people could share with their friends. And it's called Vegan Survival Guide for the Holidays. and it's, you know, it's really about like creating recipes that give, that meat eaters can enjoy, people who,
right.
you know, don't necessarily think about that.
Right.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
Well,
isn't
it funny? Yeah. When I went to, last time we saw Ed, we went out to one of his favorite vegan restaurants. Do you live out in near him in L.A.? Area?
I currently do, yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Then maybe I'm going to have to visit you, too, when I go out there in November. Okay, sideline. But, you know, like, I love how people, when you say, like, I have some extended family members that I adore, and they're very, very Italian. And you're like, okay, so you're vegetarian, so you eat chicken, right? And you're like, no, I don't eat chicken. It's very hard. Well, you eat fish, right? And I'm like, well, you know. So, yeah, I just, like, have gotten into the habit of basically bringing a dish that I would enjoy eating and hopefully everybody else will enjoy as well.
Well, you know, I think, like, in today's age especially, we have all these different degrees of dietary restrictions, right? There are people who
gluten-free.
They identify, right, gluten-free. People who identify with being a vegetarian but, you know, still eat fish. And I think that makes it confusing, and I don't ever try to judge anyone based
right.
on what, you know, like, do what you do.
Right.
I just try to provide opportunities to explore different eating options. And so the book, you know, that's why we made it free. The book was really about promoting, like, here's some great tasty things that anyone can really create, and hopefully everyone can enjoy them.
Right, exactly. So give us a couple of ideas.
So one of my favorites is I did this roasted Brussels sprout vegan mac and cheese. I just want to plant my face in it every time I look at the photo. It's just, you know, just like, it's so tasty. And I remember my mom had come down to kind of help me with, you know, some of the recipes. I cooked a lot with my mom growing up, and she's, you know, sort of, I got it from my family kind of thing. And, I made that recipe over and over, and, you know, as I was testing it, and we sort of were loving every kind of version of it. We lived off pretty much roasted Brussels sprout mac and cheese for a good week.
So tell me, do you make your own nut cheese or vegan cheese, or was it cheese?
No, cheese is my weakness.
I discuss this. I'm totally with you. Someone said to me once that they were a chegan because they eat cheese, and I thought, oh my God, that's hilarious. That's me.
And there's so much truth in that, too, especially when you're kind of initially transitioning from, you know, being a carnivore to
right.
being vegetarian. Right. It's like any restaurant that you go to, it's like, oh, here's your, like, something with cheese. You know, it's like cheese enchiladas or something. You know, if it's not a portobello mushroom, it's cheese. You know, one of the two. So,
and of course, I've got no excuse because I've been a vegetarian for, like, you know, 30, 40 years. So,
well, you know, I mean, I'm in the same boat, and not quite that long, but quite a long time, and I still devour cheese like it's going to go away tomorrow.
I go in fits. I go in fits where I'm really good, and I kind of clean up my act, and I'm doing all my – I still make – even though I eat cheese, though, I'm still kind of a crazy, and I make my own cashew milk and cashew cream and stuff, sour cream and stuff, and I still use that. And then I go out, and I'm like, oh, blue cheese? Yes, please.
Well, I do this thing every now and then, and I keep meaning to put it on the blog. I call it sort of kind of vegan, where it's like I'll make maybe a a vegan mac and cheese, but I'll toss a little bit of cheese in there, so it's like not totally vegan, but it's a lot less cheese than if you were to like have a real cheese sauce.
Exactly.
And so you kind of get those flavor components, you get the, you get that fix. It's like a meth addict. I just need a little bit, right? And so, you know, just something to hold me over.
Yeah,
and,
I totally get it.
It adds that flavor, and you know, I don't feel quite as guilty.
Of course, there are all kinds of studies now showing that there is an addictive component to most cheeses. And I can't remember what the name is. It the casein? I can't even pronounce it. But whatever it is, it just bums me out. You know, I just need another 12-step program in my world. You know.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm there.
Please.
Well, I think just, you know, food in general has just addictive components, right? We need it. Like, we need it to survive. And, I mean, you sort of see that kind of in, without getting into sort of eating disorders on this call. But,
yeah.
You know, you sort of see it in different, there's an emotional component to food, and then there's a community component to food, and it has all these different things. So, you know.
Well, you know, I am not one of those people that generally eats to survive. It's like I live to eat. I love food. I love food, and it's just not going to go away. So that's okay. You know, I try to make it healthy. So back to the Brussels sprouts. Describe this to me now.
So it's, you know, it's a cashew cream-based cheese sauce.
Oh, okay.
Using nutritional yeast and, you know, other components to kind of give that sort of acidity and tang that you get in cheese. And then it's just, you know, it's really simple. It's just, you know, the cashew sauce is pretty easy to make, and then it's basically pasta and roasted Brussels sprouts all kind of tossed into a casserole, and then like some breadcrumbs on top, and you bake it, and it's just delicious.
Yeah, I would be face down in that too. Yeah.
Make sure you don't do it when it first comes out of the oven. It's all hot, but
a little
like
hot.
After that, you know yeah.
Yeah. And so, all right, so that sounds awesome. So do you experiment with cashew or nut creams and cheeses?
Yeah, definitely. I often will just eat real cheese, but like I do try to kind of force myself to explore those options. My newest thing right now I'm playing with is the bean water, like using the liquid from chickpeas.
Yeah.
Not as a cheese component, but maybe there might be an opportunity for that. I haven't quite nailed it just yet, but I just sort of love the variety. I mean, that's what it comes down to me. I love variety, and it's more about eating a variety of things because I love to eat.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Anything else.
Well, it's probably somewhat healthy though that way to really explore a variety of things.
It's a lot more interesting.
It sure is. And you know, like never let it be said we are bored with our food for me anyway. So can people still go get this this free book from last year?
Yeah, it's still up there. It's up on my website. So if you go to cookingstone.tv, I believe the URL is a free vegan cookbook. So you can also just Google it. If you Google my name or Ed Bakley and cookbook, it'll probably pop up too. But yeah, it's still there, and you just download it and get cooking. A couple other things that we have in there. I did these bourbon spiced carrots. They're glazed, and they're just, you know, like just a little bit of a bourbon to kind of, you know, add that earthy kind of oak flavor that you get from the spirit.
Buzz.
Stuff. yeah. Not enough to get a buzz. But you know, there's maple and bourbon and they're just delicious. And, probably like my favorite recipe, just because I love nut loaves a lot. And I did this, I wanted to do one that was a little kind of outside the box. And so I did one that was made with butternut squash.
Ooh.
And it's very delicious, but the best part of it is I did a sriracha cranberry glaze over the top.
Oh, come on.
And I could just bathe in that. I mean, I don't really need anything else.
I would find food to put that on other than, you know, I would just like, okay, I want to have the sriracha cranberry glaze, so what can I have on it because I've had enough nut loaf or whatever.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you could use it. I mean, you could use it for burgers. I mean, there's so many different things. You could just, you know, sandwiches, anything. You could, like, smear that on. It was just delicious.
I'll be making that.
I highly recommend it. It's a perfect kind of, like, tangy, spicy.
Speaking of loaves, I've got a couple of different. There's a lentil loaf I like, but my favorite go-to is, like, the Cranks cookbook. Have you ever, that English, there's a old vegetarian restaurant called Cranks in London?
I'm not familiar with that one.
It's a classic, but what, you know, it's a sort of like a basic nut loaf, and you can really just get creative. Like when I have leftover vegetables, you know, you can kind of chop them up and throw them in. But it's really, it's the best. Yeah, I don't think it's vegan. I think there's cheese involved.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say like my favorite one actually uses ricotta. It's a, and I don't have the recipe for it. It's just a vegetarian restaurant in San Francisco that I went to quite often when I was living there, and I could live off this stuff.
Is it still up there, that restaurant? Because I'm going to be in San Francisco just before coming down to San.
It is, and I can never pronounce the name. It's, I can just tell you that it's sort of, I mean, the food's great, and it's like right on Market Street. It's really easy to find. You can't.
Oh, I'm going to be staying on Market Street, so that party's.
Yeah. So if you Google vegetarian restaurant, it'll come up, and the food is delicious.
Okay. Cool. See? All right. Well, I'm glad we connected, and I'm hoping that we'll get to talk to you again because there's probably lots more fun we can talk about.
There's always going to be food to talk about.
Always, always. Thank you so much, Jerry. And I'm sure we will post this with a couple of recipes and links to the downloadable free book.
Great. Thank you.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Can the nations of the world agree on a global treaty to reduce climate change? A student-run simulation of the Paris Climate Conference suggests it's possible. Participants from more than 10 schools gathered at George Washington University to negotiate global rules for reducing emissions, adapting to climate impacts, financing climate action, and compensating for loss and damage. Each student was assigned a country to represent.
The simulation forces you to take on the persona and take on the needs and wants and holding points of other countries. And I think all students really gained a perspective on the impacts of climate change on a global scale.
That's organizer Eleanor Davis, a student at George Washington University. She says there were challenges. The U.S. and Russian delegates debated the text on pollution reductions until the end. But the students finally approved a treaty and walked away optimistic about the coming negotiations in Paris, which many of them plan to attend.
We do care, and we are listening, and we are paying attention to what happens in Paris, which puts extra pressure on the negotiators to come up with something that not only affects them, but also positively affects our generation.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people, who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Conversation with this woman before we turn on the mics. I am such an admirer of her work, which has been a life's work. Sally Ranney is among many, many things. She's one of the co-founder of WECAN, which is Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. That's where I met her in that capacity recently at a UN event. She's the president of the American Renewable Energy Institute, ICUN, and I can't even read my own handwriting. There are a million things. She's on the Board of International Investment. Okay, can't read my handwriting. This is getting embarrassing. But I know she works for conservation, sustainability, climate action, endangered species. The list goes on, and she has worked with three presidents. If you go on her website, Sally Ranney, RANNEY.com, I think. Right, Sally?
Yes, that's okay. Right.
If you go on there, you're going to see like pictures of her sitting with Jimmy Carter and Mikhail Gorbachev, she has had an enormous impact on making change already through public and private sectors. So I could go on for hours, and I'm going to encourage you to go learn more about her and be inspired yourself. But I want to talk to Sally. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well,
thank you. Much.
I appreciate your time because you're clearly an extremely busy woman, you know, single-handedly saving, not single-handedly, never, ever. But it sure seems like it, and it's very inspiring. So one of the things that really got my attention at the weekend event in your opening comments, you talked about consumerism and why we really need to pay attention to where our money, you know, what we're purchasing and where it comes from and who made it and what is the consequence and the impact. And so I thought going into this holiday season of consumer craziness, to put it mildly, I wanted to talk to you about this. So, you know, tell us what moves you about this topic.
Well, what moves me really about this topic is because it's the elephant in the room, particularly for developed countries.
Yeah.
Not so much for developing countries, but for developed countries. And consumerism directly translates to carbon emissions and ocean acidification, CO2 in the atmosphere, and everything that we choose, everything that we buy, everything that we say we want and go pursue that in the market has an impact.
Right, right.
It has, and it has a deep impact. And we think that when we walk into a store and we buy, you talk about the holidays coming up,
right?
And we think of things that we want to buy for our loved ones, our friends, our employees, etc. We walk into a store, we have our list, we go grab everything, we put it on the counter, and we think that that transaction is between me and the clerk.
Right.
Wrong.
Right.
There is a whole series of impacts that are associated with every single thing that you bought.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't ask ourselves that question before we buy it. One of the things that I was saying at the forum at the UN where we met is that if you can't answer certain questions about a product you're buying, stop shopping.
Right.
Where did the natural resources come from?
Yeah.
What was the labor that produced that? How many rivers or any rivers polluted mm-hmm. by the toxins associated with producing that product? How is it recyclable? If it's not recyclable, then what happens to it?
Right.
Does it go to landfill? Is it made of plastic that's not biodegradable and it goes into the ocean?
Right, right. Yeah,
what is the end result of what you buy? Now, there's statistics out there that 65 to 75% of what Americans buy at holiday seasons end up within 5 years in a landfill.
Wow, that's stunning. That is crazy. And
it's crazy.
How much of that is plastic is all I want to know because, yeah, you know, some of it's packaging and a lot of it's just plastic.
Oh, the over-packaging is outrageous. Over-packaging on everything. And particularly cosmetics for women.
Yes, yes.
Buying into the fashionista, you know, mentality where you have to have this and that every season. It's absolutely crazy, and we buy into it because there is $458 billion spent in this country alone annually on selling us, advertising that's selling us all that stuff.
Right, so, yes.
So we are constantly plummeted with, and it also has to do with psychology and imaging, mm-hmm. particularly for women. You know, in the developed world, Women have 80% of the purchasing power.
Right.
They're the ones who pay the utility bills. They're the one who buy the clothes and the food for their kids. They're the one that go with their husbands and usually are the ones that say, "This is the, believe it or not, this is the car we need for the family."
Yeah.
Not the little sports car you want. We have three kids. You know, we need this.
Yes.
So 80% of furnishings for the home, the list goes on and on, are made by women. So women are the ones. There is tremendous political power and moving the market. Women have that power to do that if they educate themselves, if they wake up, and
right.
if they stand their ground and yeah. say, "I am not going to buy this unless it's truly sustainable."
Just
women
watch.
Go into furniture stores and want a hardwood coffee table.
Right.
And they don't even ask, "Well, what forest had to be felled so that I could have a hardwood coffee table?"
Yeah, yeah,
in my
yeah.
living room.
Actually,
it is insane.
I just did an interesting segment with a woman named Rachel Winokur. It was all about fair trade rugs, and I had really no idea. And I'm fairly aware. I do this every day, and I just really never thought about who's making my rug and where it's coming from, because apparently it's often, you know, small children that are overseas
exactly.
that should not be doing this work. It's toxic, it's dangerous, and they're not doing other healthy things children should be doing. So
right.
it's
exactly right.
Every
and, you know,
day.
The fashion industry, so many, both designer and non-designer clothes are made in Asia and in China because of the dyes they use. They say the rivers run the color of the season.
Yes, yes. And I've seen images that are just really disturbing.
Yeah, very, very disturbing. So there's one thing that I have been investigating, and I know there are others are too, is sustainability labeling
yes.
for products. And actually, large corporations could leverage themselves through their consumers to implement this without even having to go to regulations at a national level or international level, is to really look at what is the whole life cycle
yes.
of that particular product that they're producing.
Yeah.
And then as a consumer, the questions that I just put forward would be answered in that labeling, and there would be a stamp
yes.
similar to the Sustainability Forest Council for
right.
sustainable wood products. The same could apply to other products. And it sounds like an overwhelming job to do that, but it really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because every company that makes a product mm. knows and can dig deep into their supply chain
yeah.
and find out where their raw materials are coming from
well,
and what the impacts
it's
are.
It's about transparency, and if they don't want us to know where their products are coming from, then they got to clean it up.
Exactly. Now, here's an example. I used to serve on the board of the Natural Step many years ago. And this was developed by an oncologist, Carl Hendrik Robert, who was in Scandinavia, in Sweden, and he saw all these cancers coming forward in children and became very frustrated because he could not find sources for these cancers. And he
right.
said it has to be toxins
yeah.
in the environment. So he brought together about 75 different scientists from around the world, and he said, what I really want to know is what is required, what are the systems conditions required to honor on planet Earth in order to be sustainable,
right.
in order to maintain a living planet.
Mm.
And it took them about 10 years. I mean, it's like, you know, instead of writing a 20-page letter, you have to write a postcard. So you distill the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they distilled it down to four systems conditions. And actually, It's common sense
right.
at the end of the day.
Right.
You cannot mine a resource beyond its capability to reproduce to its original numbers.
Mm.
So you can't mine a fishery.
Right, right.
You know, beyond, you can't take more trees from a forest that cannot regenerate in the original biodiversity. This is not about planting trees in
yeah.
tree farms.
Right, right, right.
Which people mistake if they don't know ecology and biology and conservation biology. They think, well, we're planting trees in rows is going
right.
to solve the problem, but it
right.
doesn't because
no.
you've lost the biodiversity. So that, you know, in that scenario, that's what that means. The second one is one species waste is another species food.
Right.
In other words, it's a full life cycle.
Right.
Nothing is wasted. Everything is used. And it's what we call now cradle to cradle.
Right, right.
And you talked about carpets. Well, there was a company called Interface, founded by Ray Anderson. Fantastic pioneer in corporate sustainability. And it was a carpet company. And they started the carpets that come in squares
yes.
that you can, you know, put down in many different spaces. And he, when those carpet squares wore out, he took them back.
Yeah, I love
they had
that.
A contract.
Yep.
You buy, but you have to give it back when you want new carpet, or it's worn out and you want it back. So he actually was doing cradle to cradle, and he would recycle.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd recycle that. And so the waste piece really fits into what we're talking about here, consumerism.
Yes.
And what ends up in landfills, what is never used, what is sold to us on television. Kids want all these different kinds of toys that keep their attention for 6 months, and then where does it go? Hopefully it goes to another child.
Yeah.
Often it doesn't. It gets broken, and off it goes into the trash.
So
we really are being invited as women that have a tremendous amount of power as consumers and political power as consumers.
Yes.
To start standing up and saying, I can no longer buy this. I can no longer buy any product that has palm oil in it.
Right. Oh, Lord. And you know, if you don't know what that's about, just go Google palm oil and see the images of the rape and pillage of, you know, forests and the orangutans.
And the orangutans.
Oh,
and
it's so
palm
upsetting.
Oil is in Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, you know.
It's in Oreos.
That episode of Years of Living Dangerously with, God, what's the actor? Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
I mean, I was literally crying and screaming at my TV when he was, mm-hmm. like, almost arrested for...
I know. It's unbelievable. And then, okay, so that's one kind of consumerism. And then there is the energy consumer.
Right.
Which women are as well.
Yeah.
And when you think about the rape that's going on in the boreal forest in Canada for tar sands.
Right. Right.
Go Google that. Tar Sands Development, Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, that's...
It is brutal. It is criminal.
Yeah, it's...
And there are corporations that we buy from, the Cokes being included, and other big corporations
yeah.
who are responsible for that. Now, in the 70s, I remember, and I was involved in dolphin caught tuna.
Yes, yes, yes.
And women boycotted buying tuna. Guess what?
Yeah.
It shifted.
Yep, yep. We definitely.
If you have millions of consumers that say, "I do not want to be responsible on my watch on this planet for the rape and pillage of the forests in Indonesia
right.
and the orangutans and Malaysia." and these beautiful forests in Canada,
yeah,
so that more crude oil can go to America and
yeah.
China,
yeah.
who are the two biggest polluters in the first place. We should be going the other direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And just say, I won't do it anymore. I rarely buy new clothes.
I know.
I go to consignment.
You were so beautifully dressed, and you happily, and I do the same thing, stated that these are consignment clothes. And I thought,
girl. They were consignment clothes. Shoes are hard to find on consignment,
yeah. Yeah.
I admit.
Yeah.
However, boots, you can usually find boots.
Yeah.
Shoes are tough. And I said, I don't buy consignment underwear.
Yeah, no, that's just not, that's not okay.
No, that's not okay. But you can't, most of the furniture in my house is recycled from someplace.
Yep. Yeah.
I have a sofa and a love seat, which I'm looking at right now, that I have had for 40 years.
Yeah.
And I've just recovered it, and it's in a sustainable produced herringbone wool
nice.
Right now.
Very classy, too. See, it's not like you have to use, you know, crappy canvas.
No.
I mean, there's so much beautiful stuff being made out there. Yeah.
Right.
It's amazing what people are. There are so many people doing and being innovative and creative and creating products that are thoughtful and sustainably made.
Exactly. And cotton is another one. Right now, there are major ads, pushes on in anticipation of the holidays for buying cotton clothes because they're very comfortable, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing said about you should be buying organic cotton. Cotton is one of the most pesticide, herbicide-laden products.
I think the statistic is like 25% of all the pesticides, chemicals used in agriculture are on cotton.
On cotton,
And most of that.
There are some pioneers in Georgia.
Yep.
Who are starting to go another direction, and Georgia has taken, as a state, has taken some action. But, you know, that's another place where women could say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not buying anything that's not organic cotton, period.
Yeah.
And just stop.
Yep.
You know, it is so easy to stop shopping.
It's actually
so easy.
A relief. And then I went on this binge a few years ago to just get rid of stuff. I had been accumulating, you know, my ex-husband's stuff. Why do I have his stuff? Why do I have all this stuff from my grandmother? I mean, some of it is meaningful, and I'm trying to find a home for it, or it's going away.
Yeah.
And I give everything, you know, to Salvation Army or whatever, but it's so nice.
Take it back. If it's in good condition, take it to a consignment shop.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so you make a little bit of money, not a lot, but it can go to somebody else. This is the classic, you know, somebody's waste, one organism's waste is another's food. Well, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, my trash can be your treasure.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I try to send as much as I can when I do those purges to consignment and and to give away and, you know, all the other places and reduce. You know, there's a woman who has started something called Trash on Your Back. And I started thinking about this, and what it is that what if you had to carry your own trash for a week to the landfill on your back?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Yeah, then you'd probably waste a whole lot less.
Waste a whole lot less, and you would buy differently.
Yes, you would.
You would buy differently.
Like,
so,
why? Why do they have
to
wrap a zucchini in plastic, an organic zucchini for that matter? It's very disturbing to me.
Yeah. It is, and a lot of it has to be. So now we get into economy of scale, and having to preserve things for great numbers of people for long periods of time, and that's where some of the vacuum packaging and all this other stuff comes in in the food sector.
That's a huge topic. Oh, we're going to go there another time, my friend, because
that's
a big
exactly.
one.
Exactly. That's a huge topic. But we don't. Women can say to cosmetics,
yes,
just stop buying these brands that, you know, they have an outer package, an outer layer of cellophane, a box, inside the box, then they have something over, say it's perfume, and then they have something else that it fits in another little box, and then they have 10 different folders, little folders in there to tell you about other products
and the one
you just bought, and then they put it in a sack to take home.
Yeah.
Right. As well, with a little bow on it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I know. It's overkill. And, you know.
It's totally overkill. So just to kind of conclude this is that consumerism really is the elephant in the room when we talk about loss of biodiversity, when we talk about climate change, water pollution, oceans acidification, and diminishment of open space, etc. All this stuff has to be produced from somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Limited resources.
So it really is one of the quintessential things that elements of this whole climate change picture that we have to get a handle on. The other one, elephant in the room, is population.
Well,
and population pushing into areas of biodiversity and species habitat for creating more farms that use more pesticides.
Right. You got to feed everybody.
Can accommodate more people, more cattle. That's a whole other subject.
that keeps
pushing these habitats. I was moderating. And so grateful to seven environmental ministers from various places around the world at the last International Union of Conservation of Nature, IUCN, their Congress. And I think it was three or four of them were from Africa countries, and they all agreed that their parks are virtual parks. Because of these problems, because of renegade loggers, more population moving in, renegade miners, illegal miners. The same is happening in the Amazon with renegade loggers and miners.
Yeah, actually, I just heard a really nice report from NPR this week about a woman who went down. We got to go into this whole other topic. Let's do another segment together because this is huge and nobody wants to talk about it. Population is such a, like, well, you're not going to tell me I can't, you know, produce.
Yeah.
So, it's a hot one. Let's schedule another time to talk about that. In the meantime, I love what you're doing and this whole concept. The Green Diva's motto at the holidays is buy less, make more. And if you have to buy, please buy green and buy local.
Exactly.
That's what we try. My kids are used to me making stuff now, and we all have fun doing it together.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And what I'm doing is I'm taking things off my shelf for Christmas gifts.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, instead of buying new things, because I have been a collector of native arts and things over the years, and I can't take it with me, and people really appreciate those kinds of things. So I just shop in my house.
Well, and I've certainly got enough stuff to do the same. Sadly, it's almost like an embarrassment, you know, of riches. Sometimes I think, you know, we all probably have too much stuff, and we can share.
Yeah. So we can. You know, we can shop in our own homes, and then the other thing which I like to do is gift cards to local markets, organic markets. Everybody has gift cards now.
Yep.
So that is a good way for somebody else to choose, but maybe hasn't thought about going to those markets or whatever, and then you expose them by giving them a gift card, and they go in and say, wow, this is pretty cool. I've never been here before.
It's brilliant. It's a brilliant way to get some friends that might not otherwise walk through that door to see what can be, you know. Sally, I could talk to you all day. I could talk to you all day.
I so appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I'm pretty passionate about these, you know, about these issues, and happy to talk anytime.
Thank God. And we will talk again because we've got lots more to talk with you about. Thanks so much, Sally.
You are welcome.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.